Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Our first story of the day comes to us out of Cincinnati, and it's actually an update on a story that we talked about a lot when this first happened. This happened in April of 2018, and this was the story of the teenager who died after he was trapped in a van in the parking lot of his school. The update on this is that his family has filed a lawsuit against the city of Cincinnati, and we'll explain to you what they say the problems are that have led to this lawsuit. But we want to tell you the original story again for those that don't remember this one. The kid's name was Kyle Plush. He was 16. He was on the tennis team of Seven Hills High School. He parks his Honda Odyssey in the parking lot of school after school. If you don't know what a Honda Odyssey looks like, the important thing about this is that there are three rows of seats, including that back row that can flip so that you can make more room in the trunk part to clear out room. So he is in the parking lot of his school, and he needs to go get his tennis racket out of the back because he's going to play in this tennis match after school. So he climbs back onto that back seat, that rear seat, and he leans over the back, you know, the back where you would lean up against to get his tennis racket, and the seat flips. He is trapped in the rear seat of this van. His arms are stuck, and because his arms are stuck, he can't get himself out. He's also crushed. His chest is crushed because of the impact of that seat flipping. His phone is in his pocket, so, and he can't reach it because his arms are stuck. But he uses Siri to call 911, voice activated. So he says, "Hey Siri, call 911. We're going to play for you in a second audio of the 911 call that he made. He actually made two phone calls. The first is at 3:14 p.m. And part of what the family's problem is was the response to this. He ends up making two phone calls. And in the course of him making the two phone calls, police respond to the scene and go to the parking lot. He makes the first call at 3:14 p.m. Officers arrive on the scene 12 minutes later. I don't know why it took them so long, but that gets into some of the mistakes that were made. They were there for 11 minutes patrolling the area to look for anyone in distress. While they're there, he makes a second 911 call. And in the course of this, as you're going to hear, he is describing in detail what is going on, where he is, and the vehicle that he is in. I'm going to warn you, the audio is a little bit disturbing because of what he describes, so just be aware of that. Again, here is a little bit of both of those two calls.
Cincinnati 911, this is the address of your emergency.
This person left. Help. Help.
Cincinnati 911.
I'm stuck in my bed. Outside the Seven Hills
what parking lot?
I'm leaving. Help. I need help.
Where are you? Hello?
I'm going to die here.
Where are you?
I probably don't have much time left to tell my mom that I love her if I die. This is not a joke. This is not a joke. I'm trapped inside my gold Honda Odyssey van in the Southwood parking lot of Seven Hills Beth. Send officers immediately. I'm almost dead.
It's pretty disturbing to listen to.
And he died.
So again, those were two 911 calls. The first call was made at 3:14 p.m. The second call was made at 3:37 p.m. And it was while officers were still there. Now, Kyle didn't know that because he can't get out of this position that he's stuck in. One of the issues that the family has is that when the two officers arrived on the scene after that first call, they didn't get out of their vehicle. They didn't find anything wrong, and so eventually they left. Now, as you can hear him describing exactly where he is and the kind of vehicle that he's in, ultimately how this ends is police leave. They close the incident at 3:37 p.m. and they go back into service. It was 6 hours later that Kyle Plush's dad finds him in the parking lot near the school, 6 hours after that first call to 911. A preliminary autopsy report ends up showing that he died of asphyxia due to chest compression, meaning he was crushed to death. This was April of last year. The family has made it their mission to change whatever 911 operations need to change to make sure this doesn't happen again. We should point out the city put $100,000 into investigating what happened, and they found no wrongdoing. They found that there were two different call takers here. They exonerated those two call takers of any wrongdoing. The family hires their own investigators to try to find out what happened. Here's what the two investigators found, these two experts. That the first call taker, whose name was Stephanie McGee, didn't share details of the van's location. She also misclassified the call for service as unknown trouble rather than as a call that needed immediate fire rescue. And had it been declared as a fire rescue, they would have had better mapping equipment and maybe could have found him more easily. She delayed entering information in the dispatching system by 7 minutes. Again, they didn't get there for 12 minutes and failed to share with police critical information about the desperate need for immediate help. Also that she heard the screams for help and him saying that he was going to die. So again, he calls a second time. The second call taker apparently improperly started technology used for hearing impaired individuals, even though she heard him call for help. And by doing that, she reduced the volume of his voice and made it difficult to hear him. She didn't play back the call, which would have allowed her to hear him describe the van and the location that he was going to die soon. She didn't call police on the scene about the second call, so the cops didn't know that a second call had been made and that the caller thought he was dying. As we mentioned, the two responding officers didn't get out of their police cruiser. They searched every school parking lot except the northern end of the lot where this van was. At one point, they were 12 parking spots away from where he was trapped.
So with everything you just read, yeah, about especially the second call taker who didn't play the call back, who didn't listen close enough, who didn't relay the van information properly.
Didn't tell police he had called back and said, I'm about to die. I'm going to die. Despite all of that.
How do they find no wrongdoing there in their $100,000 investigation?
So the city's expert found that with that first call, she followed procedures consistent with her training. That was what they found all across the board. The first 911 call, the second call, and the officer response. Officers followed procedures consistent with their training. That is counter to what the family, their experts, have found. All right, so we can talk more about this coming up. They are seeking unspecified damages. They have set up a website dedicated to making sure these kinds of things don't happen again. And they're having some trouble with how this played out at City Hall.
It sounds to me like they have got a lawsuit.
Yeah.
An easy-to-win lawsuit. But then again, those are very difficult. What do you think? 576-7798. Does the family have a case? Does mom, does dad, do they have a case against the city of Cincinnati and this police department? 576-7798. Phone number as always. Text in 22980. We are talking about Kyle Plush. You may remember this story from back in 2018.
So, series of events happened or didn't happen that could have prevented the death of the 16-year-old tennis player who had his Honda Odyssey parked in a school parking lot after school before a tennis match. And if you don't know a Honda Odyssey, it's got three rows of seats.
It's a minivan.
The back row folds down to allow for more space in the back. So he goes to the back row of seats and essentially reaches over the back seat to grab his tennis racket. That shift in weight shifts the seat and it crushes him. It folds and it crushes him. His arms are trapped, so he can't reach his phone that's in his pocket. But he uses Siri, and he calls 911, and he makes two 911 calls. The first is at 3:14 p.m. Again, this was last April. The second is at 3:26 p.m., 3:25 p.m., and it's while officers were responding to the scene. In the 911 call, he describes his location. He describes what van he's in and what it looks like. And he repeatedly says things like, I don't have much time left. I'm almost dead. I'm going to die here. This is not a joke. Police don't find him, although we learn later they got 12 parking spots away from his vehicle. And it ends up actually being his dad that finds him in that van 9 hours later. He died, obviously, from asphyxiation, being crushed to death, essentially. So the city did a huge investigation and ultimately exonerated the two different call takers and the two officers involved, saying they followed their training. The family did their own investigation, hired a couple of experts to come in and do their own investigation, and they found a series of problems. Now, maybe it's accurate that the three people involved here, the two call takers and the two police, like four people involved, followed their training. But there were a lot of problems that ultimately the family found, including that the first call taker didn't share details of the van's location, misclassified the call for service as unknown trouble. Essentially, a lot of the people involved here, the call takers, did not accurately communicate the seriousness of what was happening. And had they, perhaps the response on the other end would have been different. The police officers never got out of their car in order to do a little bit more looking. They looked in every school parking lot except the northern end of this lot where he was. So the family is suing for an amount that has not either been decided or has not been made public. And the city did change some things. The 911 center, which had been really underfunded, was taken out of police control. It was put under civilian leadership now that answers directly to the city manager. Employees at the 911 center got additional training. More people had been hired. The city upgraded the system also. And so now it's called Smart 911 that allows people to put information into that system that helps emergency responders know more about when they're called. The family's not too pleased with how some of this went down at City Hall.
Knockdown lawsuit.
Yeah.
Seems like a knockdown lawsuit for all the failures that you laid out. 576-7798. What do you think? Mary's in Kansas City. Mary, you're our leadoff hitter today on KMBZ. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. You know, you don't need more people to understand an emergency. And that young man did everything to let that receiver at 911 know that this was an emergency. I was crying. I'm sorry. It was so hard to believe that it was so. And as far as training, they did not follow their training. I'm sorry. I'm a little flabbergasted over this.
Take your time.
I want them to win this lawsuit. That's horrible. And I'd like to know, did either of them have children, teenagers, anything? To hear a young man or a young woman say, I'm trapped, this isn't a joke, I'm going to die here. My God, I mean, right away I think of my kids and my grandkids. And it's scary to realize sometimes our fate, our time, is in the hands of someone who's listening, and it's up to them to go forward with it. I've never thought of it that way, but I am today.
Absolutely. And Mary, it is, you know, when you start reading the details and when you play that 911 call, it's hard. You know, your kids are not, you know, it's hard to think about that situation. You picture it. He's upside down or he's trapped or whatever. He can't get to his phone and he's desperate.
There have been other cases where information has not been appropriately relayed between 911 and emergency responders. And it's amazing how critical that step is. Mm-hmm. that these people who are 911 call takers, who are not getting rich by doing this job by any means, and it's an incredibly stressful job, but how important that job is. The story that we have, there's one version of this that talks about a Texas mother who was killed by her estranged husband during child visitation at a hotel. Her nine-year-old daughter had called 911 but never reached a call taker because she had to dial 9 first. I mean, it's amazing the calls that are placed sometimes that don't get to the right place.
Let's talk to Stacy in Kansas City. Hi, Stacy.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering if you guys have heard or found out how he got in there or why he
what do you
was
mean?
In there.
Got in where?
in the car.
Well, we told you it's his car. He wanted a tennis racket.
Okay, I came in late.
Okay,
and so
yeah, he instead of opening the back, he climbed through to get a tennis racket in the back. The seat turned over on him, and he got trapped in the back of the van.
Gotcha. Okay, as far as whose fault or who's at blame, I mean, the police went out there and checked. I mean,
but yeah, did they?
I mean, with a fine tooth comb, probably not. Were they supposed to? I don't know. I'm not a cop. I would have probably drove around, be shining my lights in cars, looking for something, some movement or whatever. Maybe that's what they did. And
they never got out of their car. The officers never got out of their car to look.
And the description of the van wasn't passed on in the proper way. Like, it's a gold Honda Odyssey. That should be
right.
I remember we talked about this a year ago, and I remember screaming, those are the three words that matter most, or even gold minivan.
It's gonna stand out.
That's what you should have been relaying over and over to these police officers. Gold minivan, kid dying.
And it is possible that everybody followed their training. But did they do everything they could do, given the seriousness of this situation? It's amazing to me that so many things, I can't call them mistakes because the city exonerated them, but that there could have been so many issues that had everybody just done one of these things different, this guy would probably still be with us.
God, see, every time we have a disaster or something along those lines, Jamie, it's like, wow, did all of these things go wrong? Like the duck boats, did everybody just not follow the right thing to do? This is a case that's kind of like that. Right back to the phones at 576-7798. Text in 22980. Janice hung on through the news. We appreciate that. Janice, go ahead.
Hey, hi, guys. I just had a comment. About a week ago, there was some people up to no good. Anyway, one came up my stairs put his hood up. I watched him. And they came back across the street, and they were coming up my stairs, two of them. One of them actually came up the stairs, had a flashlight, and he just put his black hoodie hat back up before he came up the stairs with a flashlight at 1 in the morning. Anyway, I got my dog right on it, and he chased him across the street. But I called back, I had called 911, and they were going to send the police, I guess, to do a report or something or stop him. And after an hour waiting, I called back and said, I guess the police aren't coming, are they? And they said, well, what made you think they were trying to break in or rob you, you know, in the first place? I said, with a black hoodie on with a flashlight at 1 in the morning. And I watched them running back and forth trying to, you know, see what house they wanted to case. And, you know, I don't have people that come up black hoodies and a flashlight at 1 in the morning. But they wanted to know why. I thought they were trying to rob me. I mean, and what had happened is they gave the wrong address.
Oh, well, that's a mistake.
Yeah, that's kind of a big one when my street's a big long word and they gave a short word.
Sure, sure. The hoodie thing doesn't really do much for me, but anybody walking up to my house at 1 o'clock in the morning with a flashlight, that's a 911 call.
Yeah, me too.
That's a 911 call for sure.
Because what are you going to do? You're not going to go out and...
Hi!
Yeah.
Did you drop something?
Yeah, introduce yourself and see what they're up to.
Hey, do you live around here? Did you lose your keys?
I'd want some backup for that, too.
Thanks, Janice. Phil's in Raytown. Hi, Phil. Thanks for calling. You're on KMBZ. Phil! Phil going once. Phil, you there? Phil's gone. 576-7798. You can text into 22980.
Do they still... Has anybody accidentally called 911 but dialed 911? And do they still send someone to you even if they can reach you? Because they can't prove that you're not in distress?
I think they have to send
someone.
Is that
still the policy? It's just amazing because that's always the story that we had heard about 911, was all you had to do was accidentally call 911 and they went to your location. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's baffling that this kid was never found in this case.
I don't know. And one of the things in the story, I think I have the USA Today version. In the immediate aftermath of Kyle's death, the city pledged to buy mapping equipment that could pinpoint where a 911 call was coming from and immediately show it on a map in an officer's cruiser. Despite pledging to do so, the city didn't purchase the equipment and last said officers have access to a city app that allows them to put information into the system and see a map, which is still a two-step process. So they still have to get the information and then put it in and then go to it as opposed to automatically. Every city should have this.
Yeah.
I call you from 911 wherever I am, and this can lead to swatting. We can get in. There's a swatting story we're going to talk about later, maybe. But in this case, and I honestly thought this technology was readily available from Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, whatever. Maybe
I'm
wrong.
It would be a given, right?
Right. Like my GPS should usually be on for police.
Mm-hmm.
I call you, you know where I am. Landlines, for those that still have a landline, like we have them here.
Yeah.
If I were to pick up the phone right now and dial 911, I'm assuming a mission cop would show up at our door.
Right.
I had a buddy of mine years ago at work. He picked up the phone. He didn't realize you had to dial 9. So he hit 9, then he hit 9 again,
right.
Or then he hit 1 again. He wound up calling 911 in the middle of his air shift.
Yeah.
Police showed up at 10 o'clock at night at the radio station
mm-hmm.
because he accidentally dialed 911,
yeah.
but they had to come out. So I assume they still have to do that. It just kind of blows me away that we don't have the technology already in place that I can do that for my cell phone.
Right. And it's the cell phone that makes things different now.
Right.
You know, and mm-hmm. that's where the technology has had to go because it used to be, I don't know technology well, but it used to be that, you know, they bounced it off a tower and you had to give your exact location.
Mm-hmm.
And then the effort was we need to be able, in case you can't speak, which this kid barely could, we need to be able to know exactly where you are.
Let's talk to Louise on KMBZ. Hi, Louise.
Hi. Actually, your caller answered one of my questions because I had heard you say the young man's arms were pinned down, but he was able to call up and he told me how it had happened. But I think those 911 callers should have been fired. The cops, I don't think they should have been exonerated. I mean, if the cops didn't even find the car to begin with, there's something wrong there. They may have followed procedure, but they weren't following their brains.
See, and that's the hard thing to you can't fight that. If they can prove that they did follow the procedure, then they're going to lose the lawsuit. You can
right.
say, "Hey, we followed the rules." Now the rules suck, but we still followed the rules.
Yeah, they didn't go above and beyond.
No,
but is that their job?
They are trained to do what they are trained to do. And Louise, it's a great phone call. I just can't imagine how you wouldn't take that call and hear gold minivan and scream at the top of your lungs, "Officer, gold minivan, kid says he's dying. Kid says, tell my mother I love him, or I love her."
But again, there were a series of mistakes made.
Yeah.
Part of the problem and part of why the 911 dispatcher didn't get his location, this is why they're putting that technology in place so you don't have to relay that audibly, but part of the reason she didn't get his location was because she had mistakenly pressed a button or something that implemented technology for people that are deaf or hard of hearing.
Mm.
That lowered the volume of his call, which wasn't great audio anyway, so then she couldn't hear more of what he had to say.
Let's go to Mike in Parkville. Hey, Mike. Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Mike. I heard him breathe. Mike, are you there? Mike's not there. Are we having phone problems these days? Like 3 days in a row, we've had some issues with some of these lines. Bob is in Overland Park. Hey, Bob.
Hey, I got 2 points. Number one, whenever a cop does an internal investigation, they always side with what the cops are doing. Number two, most cops are only trained to create revenue for the city, so they don't generally get out of their car unless they're writing you a speeding ticket.
You believe that? You don't believe cops are out there trying to do the right thing? You think cops are only have their job and only are trained to bring in money?
Oh, yeah. I think that their main purpose in life is to bring money into the city. If you're dying on the side of the road and they're writing a speeding ticket, they're going to finish writing that speeding ticket before they come and help you.
It's sad and depressing. You have such a negative opinion of why police officers put their damn lives on the line every day. That's a terrible opinion, Bob. But you're allowed to have it. That's what makes this country great. And I hope one day a cop's going to be looking at somebody and say, "Hey, I heard that guy's voice. I know he's screaming in pain, but didn't he just dog me and my brothers and sisters on the air and say all I care about is money? Anyway, I got to go write this speeding ticket. Bob, we'll be with you in a sec."
I mean, the problem is that we just did the story about quotas for speeding tickets in certain areas that they have quotas to meet. But it's not the officers who decide that. They're just doing what they're told.
It's too bad you have that opinion, Bob. I wish you would change it, but it is yours, and we thank you for it. Final call, Nikki in Kansas City on KMBZ. Go ahead, Nikki.
Hi there. Well, one point is I'm a retired cop, and we never had quotas that we couldn't, you know, put aside.
Do all you did something bad going on? How long were you a police officer, Nikki?
I was 5 years in Columbia, Missouri, back in the '70s, actually.
So okay. And quite a long time. All you cared about was bringing in money, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. but actually, to your all's point, I was involved in an accident where a guy in front of me stopped very short and hit the guy in front of him. I was behind him. I stopped short, and the motorcycle behind me put his bike down before he hit me. So he hurt himself a little bit on his leg, but, I mean, he was following too close. Long story short, he chased me after that, screaming and yelling, "I'm going to get you. You stopped too short. You hurt me. It scared me to death." I tore around through, and you can picture this, Null and 95th, tore around in that area all over to Mission in the neighborhoods while calling 911 and pleading for help for somebody to come help me. I thought this guy was going to hurt me if he caught me. And the police officer or dispatch who answered the phone actually said to me, "We don't know where you are, so what jurisdiction are you in? Are you in Prairie Village or Overland Park? We need to know which cop to send."
Wow.
Not good. Not good at all. So I managed to elude the guy, but when I got back home, you know, I asked my husband, who's also a former chief of police, and I said, "What's going on here?" And we discussed the fact that a couple things are at play. The cell phone companies, you need to know, first of all, that they don't all communicate with each other. They don't all have that locator, GPS locator, you know, on phones readily available. Well, it's readily available. People don't understand what it does, so they turn it off, right? So they can't find you.
Right.
But they all don't communicate with each other. There's not an open communication across all the jurisdictions, and there really does need to be.
Hey, Nikki, can I ask you a quick question? Why didn't you go to a police station?
Candidly, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I didn't know where there were any in that neighborhood. And
okay.
I would have, but you know what? It would have taken me a long time to get to a KC like South Patrol office where I live close to a downtown.
I just think you should have gone I would have gone. I mean, obviously you said you don't know where you were, you know, in terms of where the stations were, but just for your protection, go to whatever you could find, you know, Mission or Prairie Village or Overland Park or whatever. But Nikki, glad you were safe. Thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate it. It's on our Facebook page. You want to read more about Kyle Plush and that story in the lawsuit? Facebook.com/981KMBZ.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.